VentureCast.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
At Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care, and we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it, all while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
And you need to listen in an emotional way. Is this really something that they can't not use? Change is always going to be hard for you, for the customer, for everybody else. The only time you're going to change is if you can't avoid change.
Hi, and welcome to Deep Leadership. I'm your host, John Rennie. Well, I hope all is well with you today. It is another beautiful day here in North Carolina, and this episode is brought to you by our sponsors, Leader Connect, Ignite Management Services, and Liberty Strength. These sponsors help me bring these shows to you each and every week, so I encourage you to click on their links below and check them out. Now, I'm excited to announce that we're quickly approaching our 300th episode, and you're not going to want to miss it. Neil Woodson will be returning to the show to launch his brand new book, Giving a Shit: How a Willingness to be Inconvenienced Can Transform Your Business, Work, and Life. I'm proud to have written the foreword to this amazing new book about the importance of service. Neil and I will be giving away 30 signed copies of this book when it airs on April 3rd. The first 30 listeners to subscribe and comment on the YouTube video of that episode will get a free copy of this fantastic new leadership book. So subscribe to Deep Leadership on YouTube today so you don't miss this special episode when it airs. Well, that is it. Today we're going to be talking about innovation, and my guest is Dr. Mark Wegman. The challenge with innovation is that most of them fail. 90 to 95% of new product launches never meet their projected sales targets. I sat down with Mark and talked about the concept of authentic demand. Mark shares research from his new book, The Heart of Innovation, where he teaches leaders how to search, recognize, and capitalize on unmet authentic demand. Now, if you're looking to have better success with innovation and new products, you're going to want to listen to this important conversation. So, are you ready to dive in? Let's get started.
Welcome to Deep Leadership. Leadership is a people business. That's the philosophy of your podcast host, John Rennie. As a former Cold War submarine officer who spent 20 plus years leading businesses in corporate America before starting his own manufacturing business, he knows that leadership matters. Leadership matters. Are you ready for some real world actionable advice from John as well as his expert guests?
I'm ready.
I'm ready.
I'm ready.
The show starts right now.
Welcome to the Deep Leadership Podcast. Today, I'm joined by Dr. Mark Wegman. Mark is known for his contributions to algorithms and compiler optimization. Pretty much every commercial quality optimizing compiler is based on his inventions. Every GIF format image on the internet depends on ideas that he's patented. He has published and patented more than 100 works and has more than 18,000 citations, primarily in algorithms, information theory, and software engineering. Mark is the co-author of a new book called The Heart of Innovation, a field guide for navigating to authentic demand, where he helps readers tap into customers' unmet authentic demand. I'm excited to have him on the show to talk about The Heart of Innovation. So Mark, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
It's an honor to meet you, sir. And you've had an accomplished career. And innovation can be exciting. It also can be a challenging issue for leaders. But before we dive into kind of some of the findings in the book, how did you and your co-authors come together to write this book? Because it seems like there was a lot of IBM influence in this group.
Yeah, so Danny and I have known each other for decades. We started out in the IBM Research Division, which is, in some sense, one of the leading invention organizations in the world. IBM's been not as successful in the innovation, I think. Danny left the research division, became an executive in IBM, and I think built some of the most innovative things that IBM did, going from, you know, no money to an $8 billion business in WebSphere, which was an interesting innovation. And it was one of the most important organic growth engines that IBM had. I met Merrick. He was, I think, an intern at IBM Research a gazillion years ago. I went and gave a talk at Georgia Tech, where he's a distinguished professor. And I was talking about technology trends. And there was a fundamental problem I had, which was we could predict certain things, but we couldn't predict others. And Merrick had worked on a bunch of startups and had understood the key that we had missed. So we started talking about that, and I connected Danny and Merrick, and they understood from their own experiences how those commonalities work. Merrick had worked with Matt, who's an angel investor. And so the four of us got together, and I think we realized we had something that the world really needed to know, because lots of people really want to innovate, and lots of people fail. And I think, you know, I believe that the world needs technology to help it, but it takes a long time once you've got an invention for technology to actually have an effect on the world. And it's because I think that what people lack is what we've tried to teach in the book.
Okay. So let's talk about that. You mentioned this, most innovations fail. I mean, some of the statistics, 90 to 95% of all new products fail. What's wrong? What are innovators doing wrong? What are we missing? Especially, you know, we have a lot of entrepreneurs who listen to the show. I know a lot of them have innovative ideas, innovative new products, and what are we missing?
Well, let me be careful about that sentence. If you've got an established product and you just want to make it a little bit better, many of us have gone to graduate school or even undergraduate school in STEM classes, and we know how to improve the engineering to improve the products by a little bit, but it's still basically the same product. The failure comes when you come out with a different product. The customers have to adapt to what you're doing, or the customers have never experienced a product like this. And in that case, the customers can't tell you what they need. And innovators really fundamentally want to innovate. They want to change the world. That's how we define the differences between innovation and an inventor. An inventor wants to create something physically new, something virtually new. You mentioned that I had a hand in inventing the underlying technology behind GIF. That was an invention. But I also wanted to change the world with it. And I didn't know how to do that. I went to graduate school. I had no clue. And the key failing that people have, we believe, is they just don't understand demand. They go out, you know, I knew how to use that compression technology inside IBM, but as soon as we got outside of IBM, I didn't understand what was driving people. And inventors and innovators get passionate about their own ideas, and that's good, but it also blinds them. They really believe that they've got the answer, and they don't know how to find out from the customers whether or not that answer really is something the customers can't avoid using.
Yeah, that's the challenge, right? So, you know, if customers don't even know they want something, right, how do you find out that there's a potential demand out there? And that's kind of what are the that's the one of the more difficult things to figure out. How do you determine that there is a potential demand out there?
And how do you avoid confusing yourself? So if I go to a customer and I'm really excited about an idea, and I say, Mr. Customer, let me give you a demo of my brilliant new idea. And I give them a demo and I say, if we put this out as a product, would you buy it? What's the guy going to say? No, it's stupid. No, he's going to be polite. He's going to say, sure. Okay. And now, since I really fundamentally believe in this idea, I'm going to take that sure, which was really eh, and I'm going to say, boy, I've got confirmation. Let me continue with the direction I'm going. And the problem is, there's a problem with getting the information from the customer. There's a problem with believing the information you're hearing from the customer. And people don't know how to do either. I mean, I went to, you know, one of the best schools in computer science. I didn't learn how to talk to a customer. I learned about algorithms. I learned about machines. I learned about all sorts of things which are critical for invention. And lots of other people did that. None of us learned how to talk to customers. And in fact, if you go to B school, they don't teach you how to talk to a customer. They teach you how to sell something that already exists. They don't teach you how to understand what's fundamental about what a customer needs, that they don't, where the customer doesn't know what they need.
Yeah, that's you just hit the nail on the head. How do we figure out what, you know, what the customer needs that they don't even know they need? Like right now, I can't live without my iPhone, right? But I didn't know I needed an iPhone, you know, 10 years ago, right? 15 years
ago. That's right.
Because I had a calculator, I had a camera, I had a, you know, flip phone, right? I didn't need an iPhone.
Right. So part of what you do is, rather than studying the innovation, you study the situation the person is in. Mm. And you get fairly concrete, testable hypotheses about the situation the person is in. What are the forces that bind that person, that constrain that person to do what they need to do? So we tell the simplest story we tell is the fish finder story. And there was a company that we know where the guy said, people are spending a lot of money on fish, the fish finding, you know, not fish finding, but you know, they're trying to catch fish, they have a boat, they spend, you know, a large portion of their disposable income on that boat, maybe more than they should be. And geez, we could make a Heath kit, simple thing that would do sonar, and they'd be so much more effective at catching fish. It sold a little bit. And they talked to the customer and they, you know, said, what do you need to find more fish? And the customer would say, oh, well, if you already did this, and they did that, and it failed, right? And they did this over and over again until one of their consultants was at a store, and they passed the fishermen were inevitably male, so I apologize for you know, the gender issue here. Spoke to one of the fishermen's wives, and you know, said, you just passed by our fish finder. Why did you do that? She said, well, you know, we go on this boat, the kids are bored to death, and they start screaming, I need more fish. I can go to the fish store to get more fish. I need something that's going to keep the kids from screaming, that's going to entertain them. And a light bulb went off. They weren't selling a fish finder. They were selling a recreation device that happened to find fish. Mm. And all of a sudden they made it colored and big and, you know, all sorts of things that would appeal to the kids and the wife. And when they were talking to the fishermen, they never heard about the needs for the kids and the wife. They didn't understand the situation the fisherman was in. You know, with the iPhone, you know, you You didn't think about the fact that you needed to send pictures, that you just talked to your friends instantly. But, you know, if you'd ask, you know, would you do that? There's a chance we would have gotten the right answer. But you need to understand the connections between the person and the situation that they're in and all the other factors that are playing with their lives. And first you draw those situation diagrams, and then you think about whether your technology will fit. And you've already got a somewhat objective description of what the person's situation is. And then it's easier to realize, hey, this isn't quite making sense in this situation.
That makes a lot of sense. In the book, you talk about authentic demand. Give us a feeling for what that is.
So authentic demand is, I can go out and I can say, do you want this? And you'll say yes. And that appears to be demand. But it may or may not be real demand. When you produce the product, it may flood. They may really be bored to death. It may even be that they really, really want this, but somehow they never actually buy. There are lots of things where, you know, I mean, I've been reading camera things about these wonderful new cameras. I haven't pushed the button to buy one. I don't need it. I mean, I actually have an iPhone that works perfectly well. So I want it, but I don't actually push the button. So there's a difference between demand and the really authentic demand. The other issue about authentic demand is authentic demand tends to come out of a process. And we spend a lot of time describing the process in the book so that you're not fooled. You know, there are all sorts of discussions about lean startup and the like. And lean startup is, and minimum viable product. Those are all ways of validating authentic demand. But you actually, they can tell you a binary thing. You either found it or you didn't find it. But when you're at the conceptual stage before then, you need to debug your idea. You need to have a pointer into the direction that's actually going to work. And once you've got that pointer, you need to validate it. And that's the process that we talk about in the book is to find authentic, you know, how do you find authentic demand? How do you actually navigate towards it? And we give you the guideposts for how you do that.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Maybe share a little bit. I mean, I know the book is dedicated, half the book is dedicated to this, but give us a sense of some of the ways that you recognize and can capitalize on this authentic demand.
So a lot of what we do, there are a variety of ways of doing this. One of them is, I think it's important to find authentic demand in a culture. Mm. A culture of innovators. Because one of the things that can happen is, you know, I failed at innovation. And if I see you really getting excited about something with no justification whatsoever, I might actually point that out to you. Mm. And you might point out that I'm doing the same thing. And so that's a piece of what you need to do. But another piece is this business of carefully mapping out the situations that people are in. You map out the actions that they take because the actions are not, you know, are not subject to bias as much. You look at the resources they have. You look at your channels, the channel that the innovator has to approach them, you know, and so we're describing a whole lot of objective things. And out of that, you know, I mean, there's no silver bullet, right? I mean, you can do everything that we say in the book and still not find any of it. You know, there's a creative spark to the innovator, and we're not going to be a substitute for that. But we can, to some extent, say to the innovator, you know, you thought you found this, but you didn't really. And then they can search some more and they can say, ooh, all right, that's the problem with this. Let me go on a little further.
We'll be right back after a quick word from our sponsors.
As a leader, you're responsible for the mission and the people assigned to you. Regardless of the size of your team, employees are depending on you for their lives and careers. For the sake of your team and the people who entrust you with this role, you need to master the skills to become a great leader. Best-selling leadership author John Rennie is proud to introduce the Qualified Leadership Book Series. This new series teaches you how to become a people-centered leader. Great leaders know that employees who are respected, appreciated, and allowed to grow will go the extra mile. These books provide real-world leadership wisdom written from a hands-on perspective. If you want to be a more effective leader, this is the one book series you should read this year. This three-book series contains the following best-selling leadership books: I Have the Watch, You Have the Watch, and All in the Same Boat, for one low price of $39.99. Begin your journey to become a leader worth following. Go to johnsrennie.com and get your order in today.
This episode is brought to you by Leader Connect, a leadership training company and video platform founded by the leadership book author and Deep Leadership Podcast guest, Neil Jurd. Leader Connect is a video and podcast streaming platform for leaders and teams. Watch it alone or as a team, and each video supports you and your team, allowing you to improve performance and build a great culture. Join hundreds of experts and learn about leadership, planning, public speaking, team building, mindfulness, and a range of other subjects that will help you lead well and build a great team. I'm proud to say that I'm one of the experts on this platform. Leader Connect is offering a 10% discount to all Deep Leadership listeners. Go to leader-connect.co.uk and enter the code DEEP at checkout. Master your leadership with Leader Connect.
This episode is brought to you by Ignite Management Services. Ignite is led by Mike Watson, who you might remember from episode 137. Mike and his team believe that everything starts with leadership, whether it's strategy execution or cultural transformation. It's the role of the leader to create the conditions for their people to succeed. The team at Ignite can help you develop critical habits to enhance your leadership capability and transform your business. Ignite Management is now offering the Resilient Leadership Assessment Tool. This is an online questionnaire designed to assess and guide leadership development, coaching, and team building. It provides leaders an opportunity to gain insights into their leadership strengths and development needs. After taking this assessment, you will receive a custom detailed report that provides practical and actionable recommendations to enhance your effectiveness. I have taken this assessment myself and found it to be extremely valuable in helping me make changes to my leadership approach. Right now, Ignite is offering 15% off the price of this tool to the Deep Leadership audience. Go to ignitemanagement.ca and enter the code START15 at checkout to get started today.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Look, Bumble knows you're exhausted by dating. All the, must not take yourself too seriously, and 6-1 since that matters. And what do I even say other than, hey? Well, that's why they're introducing an all-new Bumble, with exciting features to make compatibility easier, starting the chat better, and dating safer. They've changed, so you don't have to. Download the new Bumble now.
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, obviously, like you say, you know, even if you follow every rule in the book, you're still going to struggle to find these because they're, I mean, obviously, right. they're you know, these stories of, I don't know, like WD-40 or Velcro or these inventions that sort of like are now part of our lives usually come through mistakes or trying to solve one problem and end up at another, like a 3M, you know, stick it note or whatever. You're trying to solve one problem and it ends up being innovative for another problem that you didn't even know existed. I think that's the heart of some of these great inventions we've had throughout our lives, is that it was somewhat, and I think that's probably part of it too, is like you have something, like you talked about compression technology end up, you know, being in GIFs, right? And so that was an application of something that was over here. And I think
sometimes— And I didn't find that.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
I published the compression thing with a co-author, but we didn't figure out that it could be used for compressing pictures. And that's one of the most important uses of it. It's also used in modems. We didn't think about putting on the modems. But this is not atypical, right? I mean, there's a famous economics paper on the dynamo and the computer. And they study from the invention of the electric motor, how long did it take to affect the GDP? From the first commercialization of the computer, how long did it take before you could notice a blip in the chart that represented the GDP? In both cases, it was 30 years. Mm. Now, some of that, the electric motor was getting better, the computer was getting better, there was invention. But if you look at the paper, it says people had no clue how to use this.
Right, right.
So there was a fundamental invention, and it took 30 years before we understood what changes it made. The electric motor, one of the important things is you didn't need one huge electric motor in the middle of the factory. You could have lots of little ones running around. You didn't need belt drives and all sorts of things. And people had to design the factories in fundamentally different ways to use this. And so we're hoping that we can speed up that process of understanding how to use the disruptive inventions that people are coming up with. And, you know, I know that your podcast is aimed at leaders. Leaders have to understand the culture that they're in, what kind of innovation they're playing with. Because, for example, if you're just building the next generation of an existing product, you're going to focus on the inventors, right? You may be, you know, talk to your customers, you find out some information. The customers could say, oh, I'd rather have a bigger memory or faster CPU, whatever. And you can, you know, you could trust them usually in that context. But if you're coming up with something different, the same culture that was great at what we call informative innovation will fall on its face in transformative innovation. The same culture that will be great at transformative is lousy at formative innovation. And the other way around, if you built a brand new product and now you want to refine it, you may have the wrong culture for doing it.
You're right on top of something that I think is really important in that, as far as leadership is concerned, we're trying to, motivate people to achieve a goal, right? So the goal may be to double our sales or to enter into a new market segment. So, modify an existing technology for a different market. So we have very clear-cut goals that we have. And so we don't necessarily see innovation properly, right? We're looking at, we need invention to be able to get to an objective, right? And so one of the things that I can see can be problematic is when you're in that mindset of, I just need this modification because I found a market that'll buy it, right? You miss out on the aha moments or something that is completely innovative and different and is, you know, and I think we sometimes as leaders, we might like not listen to that idea because we're focused on the other goal. You know,
we might not listen to that idea. We may also not listen to the fact that somebody else is going to threaten us using that idea. There's all these, there are 10 million discussions about disruptive innovation. I mean, I could give you examples, but they are typically somebody is following, in a linear step. They had a product, they make a better product, and then somebody out of left field says, customers, we don't want that better product, right? I mean, one of the stories we tell it is an IBM story where IBM had an invention which was mind-bogglingly good to make disk drives faster and cheaper and the like. strikes had actually gotten cheap enough that that wasn't what people were focused on. They were focused on the management issues of how do I manage this farm of disk drives? And we got quite flat-footed, even though we had actually invented both of them. But we didn't realize that one was going to be disruptive because the other was just a continuation of what we'd always done.
Yeah. So that's interesting. So how can leaders have an ear or an eye towards sort of, transformational type innovation or, ideas that are completely out of left field? How do we encourage that sort of behavior in our leaders so that we don't miss out on potential, like you said, the IBM case study being an example of where you sort of missed out on an opportunity because you're focused on sort of solving a problem that the market needed.
Right. And this is very hard. The transformative ones are sometimes the hardest. In the formative case, which is you've got something brand new, you know you don't know what you are, what you're doing, right? Yeah. In the transformative case, you've got, in IBM, we use the phrase antibodies. We've got all the people who are embedded in doing the things the way they've always done them. And they'll find some reason that what you're doing is wrong. And they'll just come out and they'll grab you. And, as leaders, you have to be aware that that phenomenon can happen. You have to be, listening. So, one of the things that Danny did is he would get called in by salespeople to help him sell whatever the current product is. That wasn't his goal. His goal was to understand the customer, because as soon as he goes into sales mode, he becomes blinded to what the customers really need.
Yes.
And the customers won't tackle what they really need because they know that he's got a one-note answer. So you need to get trusted by them. You need to listen in an emotional way. Is this really something that they can't not use? And we talk about this not principle. And, change is always going to be hard for you, for the customer, for everybody else. The only time you're going to change is if you can't avoid change. Right? And that, often you say, well, I've got this innovative product, it's cheaper. We've got lots of examples where people, could say, $60 million doing this, $60 million doing that. And they actually don't push the button. They don't purchase it, because it's not worth it to them to disrupt their lives. Sure, they'll save money for the company, but they'll also, it's a disruption to them. So what is it that they can't avoid doing? And that's really the fundamental test.
Yeah, I can see that happening. I was involved in a lot of the smart grid technology development through the years. And what we found was we were on the bleeding edge because we had all sorts of great technology, but we were in an industry that was highly conservative and didn't want to risk having any outages on the grid. So they were not willing to put in the technology. The technology existed, the ways to make the grid more reliant and stable and efficient was all there, but it was all new to the utilities, and they weren't willing to spend the money to do that because they were afraid of the risks associated with it. So I think you can sometimes be on, too far ahead of the curve, there's a technology adoption and you have something, but it can be 10 years before people are even willing to actually spend money and actually purchase it too. So that can be a challenge as well.
And sometimes, I shouldn't get involved in a situation I don't understand. But sometimes what you can do is you can make the customer feel better, not by changing the technology, but changing the way you're selling it to them. Maybe you could give them an insurance policy. I don't know. You probably thought of all those things. But, you know, you, you need to understand where the lever points are. And part of what we say in the book is, if you just trust your instincts and you're really passionate about what you want to do, you can go in the wrong direction. Right? I mean, you need the passion to do something. I mean, you know, hopefully all of us have it. Some of us don't, in which case, you know, maybe this is all irrelevant. But if you've got that passion, the passion can blind you. And so you need to go about this in a scientific way. And that's very hard. Because what you do is, as you go through the ends of a scientific way, you find out you were wrong. And you don't want to know that you're wrong. Because you really want to succeed at this. You don't want to change either, right?
Yeah, yeah.
You got to take that evidence. You got to search for the evidence in a systematic way. You got to believe it when you find it. Maybe you can sidestep it. There often you can find a way around it. But if you don't do that business of finding around it, you're practiced in a, you know, when you finally go out, it's going to be, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. I do like what you said. I think it's really important. And again, I put myself in situations like that throughout my career, is the idea of listening without trying to sell. In other words, listening to a customer and how they use similar products or your products. And like the fish finder example of where, like, there's a family involved, which is like, okay, wait a second. We're thinking about, you know, different technology. You know, we're thinking about the technology and how much resolution we can get on a fish, and we're focused on that. And then you hear the kids want something to do on the boat. And then, but if you're, like you said, a scientific approach, maybe less passion, but more listening, not trying to sell, but trying to observe what's happening. I think that's where there's some magic there that happens. If you're not out there trying to push one technology, but willing to listen to how customers are typically using products like this. I think it's kind of interesting. That's a great, the fish finder is a great example of that story.
The fish finder is the easiest one, but there are lots of others that we give in the book that,
yeah,
you know, require a little bit more background to follow.
Yeah, yeah. Well, this, I mean, we really just scratched the surface. This is an amazing book. It's called The Heart of Innovation. Mark, what would you say the final message you'd leave with our listeners right now?
I'm not sure, but the part of the thing is, we're passionate about these ideas. We think that they're important for the world, and we'd like other people to help spread the word. I mean, I think that we can't, you know, we see all these massive changes. And we need people to figure out how we can incorporate those changes in a productive way in everybody's life to change the world for the better. And so what we want is, you know, we're not going to get rich on this book. I mean, it would be nice, but we've gotten rich on enough other things that's not why we did this. But we'd like people to look at the book, to comment on it, to think about it, to spread the word and to help develop this idea to the next stage.
That's fantastic. I mean, again, this is such an important topic. Entrepreneurs, leaders, you're listening in, you're thinking about this. Do you truly know what the authentic demand is from your customers? I guarantee you probably don't. And so this book is going to give you a way to sort of systematically kind of understand it better and maybe just give you an idea of a different way to think about innovation and creating new products and new technologies for your customers. So I highly encourage this book. It's called The Heart of Innovation. Mark, how can people find out more about you and this new book?
So we have a website, not surprisingly, theartofinnovationbook.com. Or you can, you know, it's on Amazon too. It's, you know, it's on all the other book, all the other obvious booksellers. And I think that's a good start.
Outstanding. We're going to put links in the show notes for all these resources, their website, plus also the book on Amazon, so you can find it. Again, this is a great book especially if you're an entrepreneur and you're thinking about the idea of innovation, you want to do something that's truly unique in the world. I highly encourage you to listen to or read these case studies that are in the book, because you're going to learn a lot of lessons from what people have done in the past, so the history, you know, we say history repeats itself. So learn from the past so that you don't make those same mistakes, but also you can learn from the successes of the past as well. So Mark, I want to thank you for coming on the show and sharing all of your knowledge on this really important topic.
Thanks so much. It was a lot of fun.
Thank you, Mark. Thanks. I appreciate it.
Okay.
Bye. Well, that's it for today. Thank you for listening to Deep Leadership. If you like this podcast, please subscribe and share so we can continue to build a world with better bosses. Until next time, this is John Rennie saying take care and lead well.
Thank you for listening to Deep Leadership.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, thank you, thank you for all you do.
We hope you enjoyed today's episode. For more information and updates, please visit our website at www.deepleadershippodcast.com or johnsrennie.com. Until next time, take care.
Ever thought about starting your own podcast?
Do you have a business or a message you want to share with the world?
Well, now it's easier than ever with Electricast. Hi, I'm Mark Netter.
And I'm Peter Rafelson. We're the founders of Electricast Media.
Whether you want to start a new podcast or already have one, join Electricast to grow your audience, monetize your content, and build your community.
With our simple sign-up, you get free promotion, world-class analytics, premium ads, and personal support.
Go to Electricast.com and join our community today.
Electricast, transform your influence.
Electricast. Miles, are you ready to record our promo for season 2 of the WannaBet podcast?
David, have you ever seen a grown man naked?
Miles, we're not here to quote lines from Airplane. We're here to tell people that season 2 starts August 18th.
But I like Airplane.
I know you do, but WannaBet is a sports betting podcast. Each week we bet $1,000 on the NFL teams and games that we love.
Well, that sounds like fun.
It is fun. And last year you picked over 60% of your games correctly.
How'd you do?
We're not talking about that. We are telling people that they can find us every Friday. So no more movie quotes.
Roger, roger. Electricast.